You're listening to Michelle Redfern and Mel Butcher on Lead to Soar, bringing you the best leadership advice and mentorship from around the world. Learn more at leadtosoar.com.
Welcome, listeners, to Lead to Soar. I'm Mel Butcher, and I'm joined by my wonderful partner, Michelle Redfern. Michelle, how are you?
I'm good, Mel. All the better for being here with you.
It's a delight.
It is.
We're here today to talk about good leaders do succession planning. And I know this has been on your mind, and I'm eager to hear some of your thoughts coming from recent experiences. I want to start with, why do leaders often avoid succession planning? What's going on?
Oh, crumbs. That's a big one to start off with. Well, it's hard. I think there are multifaceted reasons, but let me kind of think out loud. I know that, you know, if I do succession planning, that means I'm going to move on from my role. Am I ready to move on from my role? Oh my God, I thought I was the one for this role. Oh my God, well, are they going to get rid of me? We're going to have lots of thoughts swirling in our minds. The reality is you won't be in your role forever. And as a leader at any level, it is your responsibility to bring the next leader forward for your role. If I may indulge myself and talk about my mindset was always, yeah, I will not be in this role forever because I was a mover. I did have a jungle gym career, and I knew that I would often come into a role to perform a particular task. And if I look at the remediate, optimize, transform, I was often in the remediate and optimize kind of phase, which is fix it up, Michelle. So I was often brought into fix up roles. And I knew, particularly after a period of time, Mel, when I thought, what is it that makes me happy? What is it that I lead from a role? What is it that I bring and how I show up? It was to fix stuff up or make it look different to the way it used to be. And I was really good in that zone. Keeping things ticking along, not so much. I'm a starter, I'm a fixer. So I like starting up, I like fixing up, and then moving on to the next challenge, which meant I needed to be very, very clear about who was going to take over from me. And so succession planning, and I say this often, if I look back over my career, I wouldn't have been able to use that language early on. But inherently, I was always getting who's going to be that next person to take over so I can take off to my next opportunity.
We're talking mostly about succession planning at the senior and executive level here today, but I do like the point that you can really do some succession planning no matter where you are. And the best talent that I've worked with are the people who really make a point to teach the people that are coming in that are new to the organization or coming in and are just junior to them, even if they're only one level apart, those people who are making the next set of effective professionals. And as an aside here, I worked for an organization where I went and read their documents on how to advance in the organization, and they had different tracks or whatever. And I noticed that in no track did they have a metric for someone being really effective at bringing up other people and doing some mentorship. And it was a huge oversight in how they were thinking about who to advance and who to advance into which positions. So I digress. Michelle, for the next few bits I'm going to put out your way, I want to keep it around this concept of how does an effective leader look at this aspect of succession planning, and kind of simultaneously, what does effective grooming look like? So let's start with this. We're evaluating talent. Talk to us about evaluating in-house versus outside talent.
Well, in-house, you've got you're at second base already because you've got an opportunity to observe people's track record as well as their potential. So there's two aspects here. We want past performance is an indicator of future potential. So we want to be looking in our own teams and then across teams. And The way to do that is to have very good talent management sessions at an executive or at the leadership table level. The ones that I've been involved in, which were really good, were about, it was the responsibility of each group leader to bring three people to the table to be discussed by the leadership group for consideration as the pool of talent for this business unit. And those three people were, and this is how I teach or how I encourage succession planning, ready now. So ready now means that I've got someone who can step into my shoes if I go, well, I'd like to go on leave. So I'd like to take my PTO, and we should be taking our PTO, paid time off. So I've got someone who can do leave coverage for me and for other people in my leadership team. So she's ready now. And it's also if something untoward happens. People get selected for jury duty. They have illnesses, what have you. So ready now. Number two, ready in 1 to 2 years. Number three, ready in, say, maybe 2 to 4 years, 2 to 5, depending on the organization. So they're the three. And you would bring those people to the table and be able to discuss their current and past performance and their future potential at length, which, no newsflash, listeners, you actually have to know them, which means you have to have had conversations with them. You have to have looked at their performance. You've asked them where they see themselves in the future, what talent development needs they have, etc. So in other words, you know these people and you know what they want and how it aligns with your succession planning. So that's a good process. And by doing that, and we've talked previously about sponsors and champions and things like that, this is another slightly more oblique, but certainly a way of sponsoring people to say, okay, I'm coming into the talent discussion. Mel is my number one. She's ready now. And I want everyone to consider Mel because of this, this, and this skill set that she's got. This, this, and this are indicators of her potential. And we want to give her the opportunity to step up, be visible, and prove herself in these roles. So she is now leave coverage for this group, or in that pool of leave coverage people.
I want to ask your opinion on a couple related things. So one, the idea that you're grooming multiple potential candidates for a role, and also sort of continuously updating the succession plan that you've put together.
This is going to depend on the type and size of your organization, Mel, but I also want us to lean away from role. And I want us to think about readiness to contribute at the next level, because role sort of says, I'm preparing Mel for my role. So people go, oh, that's sweet, Mel's set. Well, no, I'm preparing Mel to contribute to the organization at the next level in a bigger way, with more responsibility and authority. So that's a really important part of it, Mel. And the other thing too, and I know I'm going off track a little bit, but I'm actually going to tell Mel about that as well. This is what I'm preparing you for. And I'm having conversations, so I'm having a conversation with you, Mel, and with my peers, so that Mel's aware that there's now an expectation that you show up, my friend. And here are the people that are going to be watching you, how you show up. Here are the people you can also go to for advice, strategic mentoring in the moment or more formally, etc. So, and I'm going to do that with all three of my candidates. The next person is, well, maybe it's Jody. Jody, I've identified that I think in, I reckon, 1 to 3 years, you're going to be ready to contribute at the next level. Let's get you ready. And here are the things that I'm going to do. What are you going to do? How are you going to start sharpening the axe, being committed to your continuous professional development, your networking, etc.? And the same for the third person. And of course, being really transparent. I've identified you. Number one, is that what you want? Because if you don't, let's kind of move on. But if you do, here's the two-way responsibilities of both of us to make that happen. But of course, there are no guarantees. So that communication across a whole bunch of different stakeholders about this is our talent pool, and what we're doing as a group of executives to develop that talent pool, which of course we know is essential because we have to mitigate risk, harness opportunities, develop the best and the brightest talent.
And with mitigating risk, you're really touching on how there's this idea you can plan for emergency successions, right? So taking the approach that you're talking about where you're developing talent in a more broad sense, you're going to be able to adjust more quickly should an emergency come up, right? And they do. People leave unexpectedly, people pass away, and we have to be ready for that, ready to pivot.
But also other great opportunities come up. So, okay, the business has got this amazing opportunity to acquire a new business. So, Michelle, we've just acquired a new organization. Off you go. Awesome. And the reason that I've been given that amazing new opportunity to be CEO of the new organization is because I've got really robust succession planning. I've got my person ready to step in, or our group has got the person. Hey, Mel, my colleague, I'm going off to be CEO of the new acquisition. No worries. Let's activate X, Y, and Z people from our succession plan to step up.
So the succession plan is not just about identifying people and putting their names down on paper. There's really a grooming that has to happen, right? So how do you want executives and senior leadership to think about development for this talent? Mentoring, coaching, training, all those things.
I really want the skills matrix to start being used more effectively in executive and senior leadership roles and succession planning. Now, a skills matrix is pretty entrenched in boardrooms. So we recruit, not all I know, but when we look at our board member selection, we have a skills matrix and it's made up of a set of skills, attributes and characteristics, including gender, the demographics, including industry experience, etc. So I want that to be part of this process, which is, okay, let's look at the criteria for Mel to lead at the next level in this part in the organization. Where is she now? And what is she nailing? And what does she need to develop and demonstrate? So we get a very targeted plan. So Mel might go, ooh, okay. So what I'm going to need, Michelle, is some more manufacturing experience because I actually haven't been on the manufacturing side of the organization. Right. Do we want to pop you in for a secondment for 6 months as a plant manager over in the manufacturing site? Or rather than that, what we might do is we're going to get the plant manager to be your strategic mentor for the next 6 months. Or we're going to send you to a course on modern manufacturing techniques, blah, blah. You get the drift. So if that's what it takes, if you need manufacturing operational experience to be considered ready to lead at the next level, we're going to expose you to that in a whole bunch of different ways. And it's the old 70-20-10, 70% learned on the job, 20% from coaching and mentors, 10% from formal learning. So we've got to apply that kind of rigor. And it's not just a let's throw everyone into a list and then hope like hell that they have the gumption and the wherewithal to know what they need to, the skills and attributes they need to gain to be considered ready to lead at the next level. We've got to do that as a joint exercise.
What, if any of this, should be communicated down the pipeline? What can executives talk about when it comes to talking to staff level folks?
Everything. I was once in an organization where there was this mysterious thing called group talent. And it was highly sought after, this, I'm part of group talent. And I once said to someone, maybe I'll get on there. What does it mean? They said, oh, you're on the list. And I said, but what does it mean? They said, you get assigned a mentor. And I said, but what else? And they said, don't really know. So there was this mysterious, whoa, I get a badge when I'm part of group talent. But what were the outcomes it was delivering? So it was kind of, I think the intention was pretty good, but the implementation lacked rigor. So we need to be clear to all of our people, this is an organization that is clear about developing talent. We are very committed to developing talent at every level. And as the executive leaders, the custodians of this organization, here's what we do. We have identified people who are ready now, ready in 2 years, ready in 5 years. And we commit to providing very, very targeted training, development, and coaching to those people. What we want from you is an equal commitment to for continuous professional development and being open to learning more about the organization, being open to taking the business forward and understanding your positional purpose. So the communication is incredibly important, Mel. There'll be reasons for and against saying, here's all the people on the succession planning list. I don't really have a view about whether you say Mel's on the list or not on the list. I think there's kind of a, perhaps that creates, if it's not implemented or communicated well, can create some sort of sense of exclusivity. Oh, I made it. No, I didn't make it. But I think it's about the process, less about the names, more about the process. But of course, executives need to be having conversations with their three people regularly.
This is the last thought that I have for executives and senior leaders, people who are actually getting towards the end of their career. You know, we've been talking about succession planning in a sense that you're moving on to something bigger, better. But as we get toward the end of our career, what I want you to think about is, are you leaving the space better than you found it? And what does that mean for the succession planning, the support that you've provided to people below you?
This is a critical business metric. And we can kind of feel good about the legacy we leave and things like that. But did I help my organization grow? Because that's your role as an executive. In fact, it's all of our roles. Did I help my organization grow sustainably? And if I haven't identified people, talented people with potential, that I've mitigated risk, that I've reduced high potential turnover, that I've increased our bench strength, I haven't done my job. Companies cannot grow unless those things are addressed. So your legacy must be that. It's your job. It's your job to do this. And I'm continually amazed at how many leaders at every level, I say, you know, you're a people leader, right? Which means you need to get the people stuff right. And there's a lot of stuff done not about people, or it's not a priority. This is your job.
Thanks, Michelle. This has been a great discussion.
My pleasure, Mel.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Lead to Soar. We sincerely appreciate your honest, positive reviews. You can leave questions at leadtosoar.com for Michelle and Mel to answer on future episodes. Until next time, we hope you'll use what you've learned here and lead to soar.